Hey, it's good to see you. Thanks for making us part of your Thursday. I'm Carl Azus. This is CNN 10. Northern Europe is where we're taking you first today. Finland and Sweden have officially applied to become part of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Since the NATO alliance was established in 1949, Sweden and Finland have stayed neutral. They haven't joined many other nearby nations in applying for NATO membership, which now includes 30 countries in Europe and North America. So what changed? Russia invaded Ukraine, and Finland, which shares a border with Russia, and Sweden, which is right next to Finland, became concerned about their own security. So they decided to stop being neutral and try to join the NATO alliance, which is led by the United States. A Swedish government official said now is the time when the democracies of Europe and North America have to stand together against Russia's, quote, naked aggression against Ukraine. When Finland started planning to do this, Russia threatened the neighboring country, saying its application would be a mistake and that Russia would retaliate. But experts say it looks like Russia's backed down on that threat. What's ironic about all of this is that Russia said it invaded Ukraine in part to prevent countries from joining NATO. Russian President Vladimir Putin sees the alliance as a threat. It was originally formed as a guard against the Soviet Union, though it's been more focused on terrorism and peacekeeping in recent decades. Ukraine is not a NATO member, though it had expressed interest in the past about joining. But now, Finland and Sweden are moving toward NATO membership, and if they're approved, they could officially become part of the alliance in a matter of months.
After a busy day of marathon parliamentary debates in Helsinki, followed by a vote overwhelmingly in favor of joining NATO, and here in Stockholm in Sweden, a state visit by the President of Finland to Sweden, finally, these two Nordic nations decided that they were going to sign their letters of intent to apply to join NATO. That turns their back on generations worth of much cherished neutrality and a military non-alignment. However, in order to join the bloc, they'll have to get a unanimous consensus from all 30 NATO members. Most NATO members are very enthusiastic about Sweden and Finland joining the bloc. They spend a lot on their military, have very well-trained armies, air forces and navies, and would be welcome into the bloc to shore up the security alliance in this part of Northern Europe. There is one member, though, that is holding out for some concessions, at least according to its president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and that is Turkey. And Russia appears to have backed down from earlier assertions that it might respond militarily or politically were these two countries to apply to join NATO. Instead, they've said, according to Russia's foreign minister, that it makes no difference. The president of Russia, though, Vladimir Putin, has warned that if there are military installations on this territory of Sweden or Finland, well, that would certainly stoke a Russian response. Well, now that the paperwork and letters of intent have been signed, they're heading over to Brussels to be submitted to the Secretary General of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, on Wednesday. Then, in about a month and a half's time, there'll be a big NATO summit taking place in Madrid. But in the meantime, the leaders of these two countries have received an expression of support from the highest echelons of NATO, the most powerful member, which is the United States, with an invitation by the US President to visit Washington, D.C. in the White House on Thursday. Nina Dos Santos, CNN, in Stockholm, Sweden.
10-second trivia. In the 1950s and 1960s, America's Project Blue Book studied what? Soviet espionage, gyres, automotive trends, or UFOs? UFO studies were shut down in 1969, partly because they found no aliens or threats to U.S. national security. For the first time in more than 50 years, the U.S. Congress has held a hearing on UFOs. Technically, what was discussed on Tuesday were unidentified aerial phenomena. And before we get too excited, a U.S. military report last year said it found no evidence of aliens. So we're talking about objects in the sky that are hard to identify. The government's taking this more seriously than it did back in the 1960s, though, in part because American pilots and service members have reported 400 sightings of unidentified aerial phenomena, and some lawmakers worry they could be a threat to U.S. national security.
The Deputy Director of Naval Intelligence, Scott Bray, did confirm the authenticity of two videos that have been floating around the internet for quite some time. It shows some close encounters between Navy pilots and what the Pentagon describes as UAPs, or unidentified aerial phenomena. Here's one of those videos.
What you see here is aircraft that is operating in a U.S. Navy training range that has observed spherical objects in that area. And as they fly by it, they take a video.
And is this one of the phenomena that we can't explain?
I do not have an explanation for what this specific object is.
While there's not an explanation, officials say they haven't found anything extraterrestrial. UFOs have often turned out to be weather balloons or new man-made technology. But pilots are now being encouraged to report anything suspicious. Next, researchers at an Austrian university have built a new kind of virtual reality attachment, one that aims to restrict breathing. It looks like a large, complex kind of snorkel. We don't know how much it'll cost or when people will be able to buy it. Could this be dangerous? Well, it reportedly has a valve that automatically opens, letting you breathe normally if the battery gets low. Of course, there are limits to this hardware. It could make the VR experience worse for people who think it's uncomfortable to begin with. What could it be used for?
They can use breathing as another input modality for the virtual reality experience, and then can naturally interact with the environment. They can blow out birthday candles, they can blow up balloons, so this improves the virtual reality experience. If users walk through a scene where there's smoke or heat, then the breathing gets harder, as you would expect. So we manipulate the resistance a little bit more so that they feel an effect on their virtual avatar, which on the other hand then increases embodiment, so they feel more connected to this virtual character. We are good at addressing vision, we are good at addressing audio and hearing. But what's missing to improve the experience, which is not so easy to realize, is haptic feedback. Everything you touch in virtual reality is kind of, it doesn't have a real object behind it. So it's like you touch the air, you interact with air basically. And the more sensory input you provide for users, the better the experience. There's a lot of potential of virtual reality in training simulations because they get more immersive. You can experience things in a safe environment in a training simulation and also make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. There can be fires that you perceive in virtual reality, but they're not really a danger to yourself. And of course, there are applications in psychotherapy and therapy in general where you can create more immersive scenarios that are maybe more enjoyable for users so that they stick to their training regimen.
Paper airplane contests have come a long way from my middle school gym. Take, for example, the Red Bull Paper Wings World Final, which was held in an Austrian airplane hangar last weekend. 171 students from 57 countries made it here. Finalists could only use a standardized piece of paper and only fold it. No cutting, tearing, stapling, gluing, or funny business. The winner for longest distance flew 200 feet. The winner for longest airtime flew almost 15 seconds. And the winner for aerobatics delivered an engaging artistic performance and also proposed to his girlfriend with a paper airplane. Of course, paper's supposed to be for the first anniversary, but that doesn't mean they should fold. When a craft project landed them in Europe and love was on the wing, maybe it was time to increase their commitment, smooth out the edges, get a good grip, and take flight to keep their hearts aloft. I'm Carl Azus. Montford North Star Academy gets today's shout-out. Thanks to our viewers in Asheville, North Carolina, for subscribing and commenting on our YouTube channel. Tomorrow is Friday. You're only a day away.